This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in Sharp Money here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson here as well. 66% of the regular crew here on Monday, the 10th of July. And now joining us live from just down the road here in Vegas. Find his work over at Bleacher Report and The Athletic as well. It is Mo DeKeel with us right now. Mo, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, but I've been in Vegas for a while. I don't know how you guys live here. That's hard.
Well, you talk about because hold on a second. Are you talking about because of the heat, or what are you talking about?
No, just Vegas. Vegas.
Oh, just itself. Vegas in general. Well, look,
I get it. You guys probably don't hit the strip and all that stuff, but like I'm here till Thursday and it's rough.
I'm on the strip about six nights a week.
Okay, well, good luck. I don't know how you do it.
I think my biggest advantage is I don't drink.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, that's
definitely helps. But tables are a problem too.
Oh, it's
Mo. It takes a special breed. That's all I'll say. Takes a special breed to survive and not be broke quickly here in this city. Mo, let's get to some basketball though. Of course, summer league going on. Wembanyama is getting shut down for the rest of the summer now. No shock there. But Mo, after what we've seen through two games, I know Twitter got all crazy after his lackluster shooting performance in game one. But what we saw last night is more what we expected from the first overall pick and. That's all we needed to see from him here in Vegas.
I mean, exactly. There wasn't much more than that. We saw everything of his offensive game. We saw him off the dribble, you know, in between the legs to a dribble to a mid-range pull-up for a 7'5" guy is pretty absurd, and it looked smooth. We saw him crash the offensive glass, run in transition, got some post-ups. We saw a whole bunch of different things from him. I thought, like, this was the game where it was like, okay, now he's comfortable, excited, exciting for everybody else. But that first game, that was not Victor Wembanyama. I don't know what we're going to think he is or whatnot, but that game was just such a shell of himself. And then the ironic thing was he was still really good defensively in that game. And I think that was kind of the absurdity of it all.
A few things, Mo. First of all, I love the screen you have behind you, which is like the old chalkboard. You see the coach's board on the side. But the reason why I like it so much is you have the very narrow spacing on the sidelines of the three-point shot. That's amazing. Good. We see how many guys step out of bounds every time. It drives me insane. And Mo's background is exactly like that. You mentioned Victor. The one thing to me I thought was a little bit over the top was the criticism on a shooting performance. It's one game. It's an outlier. I thought what we saw in game two is what we're going to expect to see more out of him. You know, he's able to, with his length and size, create problems defensively, alter shots, block shots, offensively get rebounds, and he's got a beautiful touch. We saw it on three-point shots, some of the face-up jumpers. I think this kid's going to be all-world. From your perspective, and forget the two games, just from maybe what you saw from a scouting standpoint overall, how would you compare him to as a prospect to a LeBron James or anybody else that you hold in that high esteem?
You know, it's just so hard to compare him to anybody because he's such a freak almost in that sense. And the way he plays, it's a cross of Kevin Durant on the offensive end, you know, with a little bit of, you know, post game to all of those things. And it's a, you know, Rudy Gobert, actually, I would say a Giannis like defender. You know, I think he's going to be a menace on the weak side. The way Milwaukee uses Giannis rotating over to block shots, I think that's going to be the best way to use Victor defensively. But like, so a cross of Giannis and Kevin Durant, like that's terrifying, you know, and it's a package that's 7'5" that moves well, is very fluid. We know he's got to put on weight, but also like he's 19. People need to relax with all of that stuff where they say, you know, he's too skinny and things like that. He'll grow into his body a little bit. And at 7'5", he probably needs a little more time to grow into that body. But I think he'll put on some muscle there and continue to kind of go forward. I just think that it's going to be an unbelievable sort of rise for him. But I think he'll be slow. I don't think it's something we're going to see right out of the gate. I think, you know, through the first couple months of the season, we might even have some points where we're a little bit disappointed.
Mo, just what you've watched this week so far at the Summer League, who are some other guys that are under the radar, not one of those top picks or premium second-year guys that have come out and played this week in Vegas that have stood out to you that you think can make instant impact, whether it's on good teams or guys who are just going to fit into rotations, filling out rosters?
Yeah, I think Andre Jackson with Milwaukee, I think he's really an interesting prospect for them, a little bit youthful, athleticism, bouncy, can defend really aggressively and things like that. I think a little bit of just a boost of energy is something that Milwaukee's going to need. Now, the problem is he can't shoot, but, you know, I think, you know, he does a lot of other things well, and I think he'll be able to help them, at least in the regular season, kind of bring some excitement to everything that they have going on. And then Utah with Keontae George, who, you know, I think he's going to be explosive, can attack the rim, is very aggressive. I think that's a great pickup for Utah. I think he's another guy that's a little bit under the radar that we should be really excited about.
You're absolutely right. I liked him a lot coming out of Baylor. I thought this kid was going to be really, really good, to be one guy to pay attention to. The play-in tournament, fan, neutral, or think it's great?
Neutral for now. I would, and that shifted from being way against it. Like, I had my pitchfork ready to go. Like, I was ready to, you know, go after Adam Silver. I hated the idea. But when it became just, hey, we're only adding two more games to the guy's schedule, it's built into the regular season, now I'm kind of okay with it. And it's, you know what, if it brings more fans' excitement to the game, that's the most important thing. Whether I like it or not doesn't matter. It's the fans. I'm going to watch all these games regardless. You guys know that. I'm a degenerate in that sense. I'm just going to watch some of the worst basketball games in the world that nobody else will watch, and I'll be like, no, but that sideline out of bounds play was phenomenal. This isn't necessarily for me. It's for the fans. And if it brings excitement and brings juice, and if the players buy into it, I think this is something that might be able to last for a while.
Well, Mo, that's the thing that I'm looking at here, where I think it's going to be selective on the team buy-in. Like, a team like Sacramento, to me, I think is going to fully buy in. A team that finally gets back in the playoffs after all those years and now in a winnable group after not making it out of round one to prove, hey, we're a real competitor in this league. We're going to show you in this. And Mo, also for teams like Indiana in the Eastern Conference side, maybe not in Brooklyn, not quite stable playoff teams, but you know what? Those games matter for us in order to avoid the play-in games in April. I think those are the teams that are really going to take full advantage of this.
Yeah, and I think the more important thing, too, is it's kind of like a high-stakes game in the sense of like a little bit more pressure. You're going to go play in Vegas, and if you're in the quarterfinals and there's a little bit more pressure to it, it's almost like, I don't want to say it's playoffs intensity, but it's going to be a little bit more than a regular season game, hopefully. And that's the idea of it. And I think that's something that might be an advantage for some of those teams. And I think the most important thing for the NBA, forget getting buy-in from guys like LeBron and Kevin Durant and those guys. You need to get the buy-in from the younger players, because they're the ones that are going to have to play in this for the next 6, 7, 8 years. And you want to make sure they're excited each time to jump into this, and that will get everybody else going.
Mo, when you look at the offseason and the free agency moves, anything that has impressed you that you like, dislike?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I can go on a whole long list of what I liked and didn't like, but I think the Lakers and the Suns did really well. I think the Warriors did really well. I'm excited to watch Chris Paul with them, which is still going to be very weird when I first see it, but it'll be something. I think he can help the second unit a lot, picking up Dario Saric. I thought the Lakers just making marginal moves around the edges, I thought were really good and smart moves. I thought the Suns did really well with the limited resources that they had to just kind of build a roster out, and I think they're pretty excited. In terms of a team that I just scratching my head at, I'm just looking at Toronto and just poking them with a stick going like, you know, do something.
I would agree with you on the Raptors. It just seems like I'm not sure what they're doing at this point in time. I want to go back to the Lakers for a second. In your opinion, are they a team that's closer to the Western Conference Finals? Even though they got swept by Denver, they were right there. Or are they a team that's somewhere in between what their regular season was and where they wound up in the postseason?
Yeah, it's so difficult just because, like, you know, their whole regular season, let's just be honest, we only should judge them from when they after they traded Westbrook, and that was their real team and their real roster the rest of the way. I think that's a top five team in the Western Conference, but we also have to just acknowledge the fact that the entire Western Conference is going to be absurd. You know, when you just look down the list of teams that made the playoffs, it's, okay, who's dropping out? Well, Oklahoma City is going to climb up, too. What are we going to do? What's going to happen with New Orleans and all of those things? So it's really difficult to kind of project that stuff, but I think they're right there in the top five.
Mo, Joe Cronin, of course, the GM over in Portland, just having the press conference that just wrapped up. Here's something he said on the Damian Lillard potential trade. We're going to be patient. If it takes months, it takes months. This feels like now, with that quote especially and everything that has been said over the last week, we are now squarely in a Kevin Durant 2.0 scenario with Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah, I just don't. But the difference is I just don't think Dame's coming back. And we can have that whole discussion of all the billion different things that are talked about it. I just think if you're Portland, you want to start the season with a clean slate. Turn this stuff over to Scoop. Turn it over to Simons and to Sharp and just start with a clean slate and go to work there and allow those guys to be able to have full training camps and attack and understand their roles. When you bring Dame in, it becomes a little bit more difficult and challenging with that. It can take months, but it's, for me, it's got to get done before training camp.
Mo, where is in a one-word answer here, where is he on opening night then if it's not Portland?
Miami.
Quarters on the dollar. Nickels on the dollar. Doesn't matter.
It might be a three-team trade. Might be a four-team trade. But it will expand in that sense. I don't think it'll just be a straight-up trade between the two of them.
Lillard right now minus 275 at DraftKings to start next season, plays first minute with the Miami Heat. He's Mo DeKeel. You can find him over at Bleacher Report, The Athletic, on the tweets at Mo DeKeel _NBA. Mo, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for hopping on with us today.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. Hopefully I'll survive the rest of the trip.
Good luck. We have faith in you, Mo. We have faith. Coming up next, we're heading over to the NFL. Three-point stance, including Dalvin Cook, still available. That's next. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are lots of sounds that you may hear. You could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, the sound of first responders desperately trying to save you. You could even hear the sound of people crying at a funeral. Because if you drive over the speed limit, you could do damage that's beyond repair. One way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. The show is Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. Dustin Sweetelson's here. Amal Shaw is here. Big thanks to Mo DeKeel for hopping on. You know, it's so interesting now. And Dustin, with this press conference that just happened with Joe Cronin too, the patience is there now. The patience is there now. And Chauncey Billups, of course, the head coach of the Blazers, talked about this earlier this week on SiriusXM NBA Radio. And Billups had a lot to say on if he's going to be coaching Damian Lillard next year.
I don't know. Who knows? I don't know the answer to that, nor does anybody else right now. So we'll see.
When you were in Denver as a player, you were involved in a similar situation with Carmelo Anthony.
Yes.
He not only does he end up getting traded, you get included in the trade. How difficult from a player's standpoint was it, all the uncertainty? Because remember, that started in the summer and it ended right around the trade deadline in February.
Yeah, it was very difficult being a part of that, you know, of the uncertainty, you know, of if Melo was going to get traded, if he's going to be with us. We just didn't know, you know, and as a locker room, me as the leader of the team, I just tried to keep everybody focused on what we were trying to do, you know, because whatever was going to happen was going to happen, you know, and but for us, we had to still play the games, you know, so we had good leadership on that team, you know, that was able to kind of keep us locked in, but it's difficult. It's a big distraction, you know, it just kind of happens. It just is what it is. Until whatever happens.
Have you spoken to him at all?
Of course I have.
And what have those conversations been like?
I would never share any things that I speak to him about with anybody. Dame and I are very close, you know, and we talk intimately about a lot of things. A lot of this has been a lot of it. So those are all conversations that I would never share.
That was Portland Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups on Sirius XM NBA Radio with Frank Isola and Justin Termini at the Summer League last week. And the mall, just quickly here before we shift gears, it really is a situation where I do agree with what Mo said in the last segment. Portland should try to move on before the season starts. But the problem with that is you're more likely to take a deal that if you're Portland's front office, you look at your fan base in the eye and say, hey, we got good enough value for Damian Lillard. That's not good enough moving forward. You need to get as close to 100% value for Dame as you possibly can. I know it's not possible to get 100% of it, but you can do better if you wait in season. I really do think that.
No, I would agree with you completely. And to me, if you're Portland, there's no way you should be, as you alluded to, taking quarters on a dollar. I think they should wait it out. You're not in a situation where you have to necessarily move on from him unless you can get the right thing in return. You've got an absolute cornerstone piece in Damian Lillard, despite his age. I think, Dustin, he's going to be 33 next month, right? And so for me, I would look at it and say, hey, look, we've got to get first-round picks or players that can help us right now. We've got potentially a 10-year backcourt in Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe. Those are two pieces. Now we've got to go get somebody else along the way up front, either whether it's by the draft or in terms of a trade acquisition. So if you're this team, yes, you would like to try and help out Damian Lillard as much as you can. However, he has not been playing for free. You have no obligation to him. And at the end of the day, you've got to make a decision that's in the best interest of the franchise and the fan base.
He's 33 in 5 days.
Okay.
I really think right now, if they're like, if they were to trade him before the season, San Antonio's the place because they at least would get draft capital out of it.
Well, regardless of how it works and how you get to where you want to be, I just think that whether it's a two-team, a three-team, or even a four-team trade, you have got to get a haul back. This can't be just something you trade. You know, if he becomes disgruntled, here's how I look at it. If he doesn't want to play, fine. Then we'll save the $50 million you're not going to make this year by playing. I think Portland is literally in a situation where Damian Lillard has no negotiating power, and it amazes me that in the NBA these teams don't show that power in this particular instance. Yeah,
someone's got to call players bluff at some
100%.
Point.
I agree with you.
And like, I'm very pro player, but it's just getting old. And I understand it's not the 90s when people just like Malone and Stockton go to the bitter end, and Malone at like 36 is ring chasing. But like at some point, one team just needs to go, no. You sign the extension, and this is the risk you take when you sign an extension.
Well, you know, so Brooklyn had the opportunity to do this last year. They called the bluff in the summer, and they worked it out through the regular season. And in all honesty, if it wasn't for Kyrie Irving, calling the bluff would have worked for Brooklyn. But Kyrie became so impossible for them to deal with that they had to move on. And look, I didn't love that they traded Durant midseason because even without Kyrie, I still thought Brooklyn was live to come out of the Eastern Conference. And the way that the Eastern Conference ended up playing out, if it's just Kevin Durant, they might have been able to come out of the Eastern Conference, especially with Miami doing the dirty work of getting Milwaukee out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I just don't – you can't have your cake and eat it too, where if you stay with – if you re-sign with a team and they have your bird rights and the extensions are bigger and you get more money, and then you can then at the end of that, after you get that with that luxury – because the team had your rights, you then ask for a trade. No, at that point, you should be able to just keep signing these contracts and getting more incentives added to them. You don't want to be in a team, don't sign a multi-year deal with them. Simple as that.
I agree with Dustin what he's saying, and I'm a little bit surprised what we don't see more of in sports, which I find interesting, because they do the exact same thing in a negotiation with the city. They hold the city hostage, and until they get what they want, they won't acquiesce. But when it comes to a player, at the end of the day, they collapse. To your point with Brooklyn, if I was Joseph Tsai's company, I would have said, here's the deal. You don't want to play? We're gonna suspend you for conduct detrimental to the team. And that's what I would do at some point in time. When you control the money, you call the shots. I don't understand. This is not rocket science. What I'm realizing more and more is most of these owners have gotten lucky in one business idea, and they're just overall idiots because they have so much leverage. What is Dame's leverage in this situation? This is a negotiation where he has zero leverage.
Well, and the argument of, oh, if they don't treat him right, players aren't going to go to Portland. Who is signing with Portland anyway?
Nobody is. But we just saw Caris LeVert take less money to go elsewhere and not re-sign with Cleveland. Aaron Goodwin currently represents four players in the NBA. Let me tell you what I would do with Aaron Goodwin. I would tell Aaron Goodwin, if you step on foot on Rose Garden or Modia Center, whatever it's called, we're going to have you arrested for trespassing. I'm telling you right now, I would draw a line in the sand, and you guys are absolutely right. Nobody is going to Portland as a free agent. So you've got to make your bones through the draft, and then when guys come come there, and if you start winning, maybe they'll stick around. But this is a great opportunity for them to take a stand instead of being held hostage by a player. I just don't get how many teams are going to continue to give in these situations.
All it takes is one.
Brooklyn was the one to do this, and then the dealing with Kyrie Irving was what blew it up more so than anything.
But think about this with the NFL. This does not happen in the NFL compared to the NBA. And why? Because they don't have the guaranteed contracts, right? The owners, they don't like something. They just draw a line in the sand. And don't worry. Dummy Smith will give you more than 10% back in revenue anyway. So you can always win the negotiation against this team or against these players. I just don't understand why they would give it in this situation. You've got to get a deal. And I'm surprised they didn't make one before the draft. That's where their best chance was, obviously, before the draft. That way they could have determined what they wanted to do besides Scoot Henderson. But what is Miami giving you? Tyler Hero? Who wants Tyler Hero on an overpriced contract?
So here's the deal, though. Damian Lillard forced it to be pennies on the dollar.
Correct.
Once he said, the only team I want to go to is this. And now do the other teams then not get in the mix because of that?
Maybe, but I'll tell you one thing. He's going to want out of Portland at the end of the day. I would rather go play in San Antonio with Victor Wembanyama.
I'd rather go play in China. What are you talking about? I'd rather be in China than Portland.
I don't know about that.
You're about to go political on me, aren't you?
No, I'm not going political. Let me tell you, Shanghai is a great city. I'm not saying that. You're just not going to make the money that
you're making.
You are. Off the floor? You're going to sell sneakers?
I think they paid Stefan Marbury and Jimmer Fredette a lot of money.
Marbury got a whole shoe empire out of it.
I don't know if they're paying him $50 million, but my point is, when you look at these teams right now, there's no reason to give in. And here's the other thing. How much does Miami drastically improve with Damian Lillard and Jimmy Butler? Because at the end of the day, I still don't think Bam Adebayo can compete with Giannis and I know they beat Milwaukee, but they shot so well in that series from the three-point line with the Denver Nuggets, with the Los Angeles Lakers, potentially now the Boston Celtics with Porzingis and Robert Williams.
The roster's gutted. That roster's they lost Max Strus. They lost someone else too. Who am I missing?
Gabe Vincent to the Lakers.
Yeah, but let me tell you, Damian Lillard over that backcourt, those guys all day, every day.
But the one thing they had was they had these tertiary pieces that contributed in big ways. Their whole thing was they had depth. They don't have depth anymore, especially not after you trade for Damian Lillard, if and when that happens.
You have a really darn good big three, though, assuming everyone can stay healthy. But
the Josh Richardson move I like.
How many times is that in Miami now for him? Three?
I think so.
At least.
I'd rather have, Jason Richardson at 45.
Cash that ticket on a Jason Richardson mention today.
Josh Richardson. Give me a break.
We will get some NFL talk. When we come back, Dalvin Cook's still available. Surprising, to say the least. That's next. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. The show is Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw. Dustin Sweetelson alongside. Mark Reynolds is going to join us in 15 minutes. Former corner infielder in Major League Baseball. Prolific. Dustin, is it good to say prolific home run hitter? Nearly 300 career home runs?
Almost 300 in 13 seasons. And I think he was top 10 in home runs per bat a lot of times in his career each season. He hit 40 home runs. Legit power.
Corner infielder. Played in a lot of places. After doing the research, didn't realize how many places he was through his career. But through that and the immaculate grid, you figure out that these guys played in a lot more places than you realized.
I'm addicted to the immaculate grid.
I went 8-9 today.
You know what I missed on? The Guardians 3,000 strikeouts.
It was the same box I missed.
The pitcher?
I guessed Bob Feller.
Same guess.
And he didn't.
Never. Did not have 3,000.
He got his 3,000s with Cleveland.
If he ever played for Cleveland and had 3,000 career strikeouts, that would have fit the grid. He was close. He was 2,900.
Yeah, because he started when he was 19.
Yeah.
Bob Lemon wasn't it either. My next guess would be Gaylord Perry.
That was the one that I
That's
saw
correct.
Completed.
It was
grid.
Gaylord
yes.
Perry?
Yes.
Okay. I was not
yes.
getting that.
So that botched me today. It was real. But you know who keeps popping up for me? And I don't know why I remember all the places he played is Jeff Cirillo. I keep using Jeff Cirillo.
Milwaukee was probably
Milwaukee, his. San Diego, yep. Minnesota.
Put in San Francisco, right?
Seattle. I can't remember anywhere
else.
Are we
trying to
Colorado?
Extend the length of Seattle?
I was stalling my
yeah,
brain.
I know that.
San Diego, yeah.
Colorado, Arizona.
By the way, I real quick want to correct something while you guys are marinating yes. on Jeff Cirillo.
Go ahead.
He's a legend.
I was wrong on Caris LeVert. He re-signed in Cleveland, so I apologize for that. Explain what you guys are talking about for people that are unfamiliar.
The Immaculate Grid is like a tic-tac-toe board, and they give you these clues that you have to come up with, and the goal is to have a really low number on it for like the percentages. So rare people.
Score.
Like my brother is really good at this. He keeps sending me ones where his score is like 19 and like 18 and 21. And like you have to, the lower the score, the better. So the obvious answers don't get you a lot of points, but they keep making it harder and harder to figure out who fits into these categories. So like today there was one where the one section, one column was the Twins, and then one across was the Guardians. And you had to match up.
So
who played for both teams? And like the answer for me, I used was Jim Thome. And it's like the Cubs and someone else. And then you lose hours of your day. But what annoys you is you can't remember on the spot these people when you have to remember them.
Oh no, 100%. Even though I was proud of myself, I remembered Mark Bellhorn today, which was
that was
good.
Mine as well for the Cubs
okay,
and Red Sox.
This is kind of scary how even we were on this.
Well, Mark Bellhorn in 2004 had one of the great years for a second baseman analytically. Like his OP, everything was off the charts. He was awesome.
A member of that Red Sox team that finally busted the streak in 2004. All right, let's go to the NFL because we could talk Immaculate Grid all day if we wanted to. Let's hear from Dak Prescott. Of course, the Dallas Cowboys, high expectations yet again, even though for them, unfortunately, the best team on paper in the NFC in their division. But Dak is turning 30 soon, and it feels like that number is giving Dak a little bit of an incentive. Here's what Dak had to say earlier this week.
Yeah, you know, I've always felt older, I guess, so just being 30 doesn't necessarily bother me, but yeah, knowing that I am the old guy going into year 8, seeing some of the young guys, some of the rookies, just seeing, I guess, the difference in 8 years or not, and yeah, it's fun, though. It really is. It's fun. It's challenging at times, making sure that I stay connected, stay in the now. I guess what you mean and what's cool and what's not. And, yeah, but this game is beautiful. That's the point, is every time you get out here and you're in between the lines, it doesn't matter how old you are, you play this game like a kid.
But as you get older, does it increase your sense of urgency?
1,000%. Yeah, I mean, 1,000%. Not only that, just injuries, understanding what I've been through throughout my career, and understanding that the time's not, you don't have forever to play this game, and I'm blessed for each moment that I get, each opportunity on and off the field, and just trying to take the most of it, but definitely with a sense of urgency.
Dak will be 30 in week one. He turns 30 later this month, and Amal, we've talked about this. We talked about this last week when I was in with you, where it really feels like it's three teams in the NFC. It's Philadelphia, it's San Francisco, even with the quarterbacking issues, and then it's Dallas.
I would agree with you, and tell you what, I think there's this little bit of a space or separation between the Eagles and Niners compared to Dallas.
I agree with that.
Well, here's the thing. I think we all agree the Eagles, yeah, significantly better than Dallas, but the NFC East is that division that they haven't had a back-to-back winner since the Eagles in 2003-04.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what you think. We have not had a team win this division 2 years in a row, and that's got to matter.
Well, I will say this with Dallas, and we've talked about it from the Chargers' perspective, where they are the ones who picked up Kellen Moore immediately, and Brian Schottenheimer is now the offensive coordinator. It'll be him and McCarthy that are taking care of that offense. I'm just curious from Dallas's perspective here, where Amal, this could be one of those scenarios, and we've seen this through McCarthy's career, whether it be in Green Bay and Dallas, except for the year when they won Super Bowl 45, of course,
yeah.
In the 2010 season, when it was actually one of his weaker regular season teams that ended up winning it all. But regular season Mike McCarthy, honestly, shouldn't be questioned that much. The guy does win. in the regular season. It's when the high-pressure cooker situations pop up in bigger regular season games and the playoff games. That's when Mike McCarthy falls apart.
Yeah, I think that decision to run Dak Prescott 2 years ago against San Francisco was horrific. It was a great call if you were a 49er backer or a 49er fan. And you're absolutely right. Dallas had the best record in the NFL the last 2 years. I think that gets overlooked. I think people would be surprised to realize where they've been record-wise the last couple of seasons. But to me right now at this point in time, I would say, even though there's question marks at quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, the addition of Javon Hargrave is a huge difference for this team. I like the Niners followed by the Eagles in a close race there, and then Dallas. But the Cowboys have a chance. Their defense is really good. I think it gets overlooked. Prescott's got to play well. I think Prescott's a good quarterback when you look at that second tier of quarterbacks. I think he's an upper echelon second tier quarterback.
Dak to me, just as a guy at this point in his career, I would have liked to have seen more already from him. And with all the talent that's around him in Dallas, and look, there is an argument to be made that that talent may not be as good as we think it is as well. But this does feel like the year where, look, Philadelphia, they are, to me, if they can stay even 80% as healthy as they did last year and Hurts stays upright, they're coming out of the NFC again. But look, guys, Philadelphia was historically healthy last year. And there are a lot of things that we talk about regressing to the mean with. That's something that we don't really talk about year to year, is how healthy a team was. If that regresses to the mean, that means Philadelphia, you're going to have key guys getting hurt. They're not going to be able to be, obviously, it's hard to be that healthy again. And also, too, the schedule is much more difficult for Philadelphia this year than it was a year ago.
And teams that lose the Super Bowl tend to not bounce back as well as others. Now, I think they have a quarterback that gives them a bit of a different mentality than others.
Mm-hmm.
But things did go their way a lot last year.
Yeah.
They had the whole NFC East had great schedules. That's why the Giants made the playoffs. Like, the Giants were coached well. They were not a good team.
And that was all you needed with the way the schedule was, and having good luck in one-score games is what happened for New York last year.
By the way, though, I disagree with you guys on the Cowboys, on the Eagles' schedule because of where they get started. Now, look, the second third of their schedule is very difficult. Real quick, just go through the first 6 weeks. At the Patriots, Vikings on Thursday Night Football, Buccaneers on Monday Night Football in Tampa, Commanders at the Rams, at the Jets. That's probably the most challenging game in my opinion. But they could easily start 5-0. They could win those road games. The Dolphins are at home on Sunday Night Football, at the Commanders, Cowboys at home. Then they have a bye at KC, Buffalo, and 49ers, and then at Cowboys. That is the toughest four-week stretch in the NFL for anybody.
But that schedule is significantly harder than what they dealt with last year.
Right.
I don't disagree with you. However, look, this team just needs to get in the playoffs. To me, I could not have been more wrong on Jalen Hurts in terms of how he's going to be as a pro. $250 million, I would have thought Jalen Hurts was a Powerball winner. I never would have thought it was a contract he got in the NFL. And he's deserving of it. He's a tremendous player. But I think he's so tough to bring down. I think this team is looking at it as unfinished business. It was a bad call that went against them, in my opinion. But I think they're right there. I think for me at this point in time, there's four teams I look at that are Super Bowl contenders and potential winners. And then there's everybody else. There's probably about six teams in the mix. But that's where Kansas City, Cincinnati, the 49ers, and Philly.
I will say this. Week one in New England, I think, is going to be a little bit trickier than we think. I think they win, but I do like New England plus the points in that game. Mark Reynolds, former MLB corner infielder, big-time power hitter, joins us next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSiN, which is why we've already released our NFL betting guide. Our NFL betting guide will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and get your digital copy of the VSiN NFL Betting Guide, or take advantage of our summer kickoff special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back in. Sharp Money's the show. I'm Jeff Parles, Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shah alongside. And now joining us, played in the majors for 13 years, nearly 300 career home runs, and a lot of power in the early owner of Citi Field with one of the best weekends you'll ever see. It is Mark Reynolds with us right now. Mark, thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Mark, going into tonight, of course, the Home Run Derby in Seattle, what would your approach be to an event like this?
I wanted to hit one my whole career. I never had the opportunity to, but I basically did it every day in batting practice. I really wanted to do it, but the approach has to be, especially with the format, you got to conserve energy. You win an early round, you got to stop and keep your swings down and Seattle's a big yard too. So, you got to really get into one to get it out of there. So, I think you got to be smart with the energy, use your time out well, and then just hopefully catch somebody on an off day so you don't have to swing as much.
Mark, take me what it's like for a player going into All-Star break in terms of, are you just kind of relaxing, getting out of town? What are you doing for a few days to kind of recharge the batteries? And then what is the mood like when you restart? Let's say you're six games out of the division or potential wild card. What is the mindset with about 70 games remaining for the players?
Tell you, the All-Star break is a much needed, 3 or 4 days of just the mental grind ends for a couple of days, trying to do this night in and night out. It's tough, especially in the middle of the summer. It's really hot. The guys are grinding, and especially those guys in the playoff race or maybe a couple games out, you go in and recharge your batteries and spend some time with the family, maybe, get out of the city for a couple of days and lay by the pool, relax. Spend time with your kids or if you have them, or, just really kind of decompress from the first half. And then, once you get back into the routine of the second half, the energy's there, you're refocused. You kind of took a deep breath and now you get all the guys, all the boys in the clubhouse to focus on, your second half goals, what you need to get done, what we need to do to get to where we want to go, especially with the expanded playoff teams that are in the postseason now. A lot of teams still have a lot of chances to make some moves and really get into a good spot for the playoffs. So these guys are going to come back refreshed and ready to really make that second half push to the dog days.
Mark, you brought it up. There's extra playoff teams now, second year of six in each league. And look, that brings in some teams that had some disappointing first halves, and two of the biggest disappointments were the San Diego Padres and the New York Mets, both managed by guys that you played for, and Bob Melvin and Buck Showalter. Just what do you expect out of those teams, and especially playing for those two guys? What do those two guys bring that could possibly help engineer a second half comeback for either of those teams?
Well, I know Bo Mel and Buck are definitely in control of what they're doing. They know what needs to be done to get there. They've both done it before. They've both been doing it for a long time. And, I think the message is basically going to be at the break is basically what I just said, go recharge, refresh. And then when we get back, it's time to work. And he's going to keep those guys, both of those skippers are going to keep the teams, hungry and in the hunt. And I can remember many a closed door meetings with both of them. And it's somewhere you don't want to be for very long. So, they know what they're doing. Those are two of my favorite managers I've ever played for. And they're going to get the job done. And if they don't even get it done, they're going to, do everything they can to keep the guys on the right path to try to make it.
Mark, if I'm not mistaken, you were never traded at the trade deadline. What's it like for players that know they could potentially be on the move? Because I think one of the things that fans and people like ourselves forget is that you've got a lot of other things going on. It's not just baseball going from city A to city B. You've got to potentially uproot your family. Now you have to go find a short-term place to live. So many different things. And you might have familiarity with the city having played there previously, but I don't think it's as simplistic as maybe we see on the surface.
No, it's definitely not. I've been in trade talks, before, never had the trigger pulled on that. But, a lot of these guys, they don't really live in the city that they're playing in. They go, they go to the, you know, say it's New York, you go there and you rent a condo for 6 months and then you go back to wherever you live, Scottsdale or Florida or Georgia, you know, wherever yeah. your home base is. So, you know, it's really you're uprooting your family to go to spring training. Then you're uprooting them to go to the city that you're playing in, and then you move back home to wherever you live. So it's a lot of moving around, and to throw an extra move in the middle of the year, in the midst of trying to play a grueling schedule it's impossible. And I never got traded, but I got released by Cleveland, right around August 1st, and then the Yankees called me like 2 days later, and I went and played for the Yankees. And I literally, my family was back home in Phoenix, and I got on a plane, packed a suitcase, and I lived in a hotel for the last 2 months of the season. So it's not as glamorous as people think it is. It's definitely, it's a blast, but it's tough. It's tough on the player and the families and the kids, and it's crazy.
Mark Reynolds with us right now, of course, played 13 years in the bigs, nearly 300 career home runs over those 13 seasons. Mark, I want to go to one of your former teams here. And of course you were on the 2015 version of the St. Louis Cardinals, an unbelievable regular season team that won 100 games in the postseason. I won't bring it up, but Yadier Molina was injured in that postseason series and not fully available against the Cubs for you guys. And obviously in the first year without Yadi here in St. Louis, it has gone as poorly as you could have drawn up for St. Louis. Just the impact that he made in that locker room, to see it devolve this quickly, it really just speaks to what he brought on a daily basis that a lot of regular baseball fans just don't realize with a guy like that.
Yeah, he was definitely a guy that that kept everybody kind of on an even keel. Things were going bad, things were going good. You know, he's like, hey, guys, we can't be too high, we can't be too – we got to keep it, you know, kind of flatlined and slow heartbeat, and whether it's everything's good or everything's going crazy, we just have to stay there and do what we know we can do. And he had such a calming presence in the clubhouse, and not even to mention what he did for the pitching staff. I think Wainwright got hurt that year. He tore his Achilles like in the second start of the season, so we didn't have him all year. We had a bunch of young pitchers, you know, Carlos Martinez and Landon. You know, we had Lackey, I think. You know, he was obviously a veteran presence, but, you know, even Yadi just kept these guys in line. I think we had a young bullpen, and it was just amazing to watch him kind of even going to like a he would go to talk to the pitcher on the mound, and I would just run over there because I wanted to hear what he had to say, because I was very interested in it too. You know, any words of wisdom were great. So, you know, having him control the game and kind of keep the clubhouse from chaos if things are going bad, it was a very underrated part of his career that I don't think a lot of people give him credit for, because he was a very, very good leader, a very good calming presence. And especially what he did with the pitchers was, you know, can't do anything better.
Mark, obviously the Atlanta Braves and Tampa Bay have had great first halves of the season. Any team that kind of maybe has flown under the radar for you a little bit so far that someone should pay attention to in the second half?
They I don't think they're under the radar very much anymore, but you know, the Cincinnati Reds are very impressive, and that town is a baseball town. If those guys start winning games and all the young talent they have coming up, you know, with Ellie and all these guys, you know, that's really fun to see them have success, and hopefully they can keep it on through the second half of the season. And you know, and my old team, the D-backs, I don't think they were expected to do much this year, and you know, I think what they have, the rookie of the year candidate and you know, amazing starting pitching staff, and they're playing in a tough division, you know, with the Dodgers and the Giants, you know, so those two teams really surprised me this year. My 11-year-old son, he's, you know, he's a big Braves fan, and he's like, Dad, you know, the Braves had like 60 or 50 something wins. I'm like, yeah, buddy, they're really good. and I was like, do you know the Reds are they in first place maybe, or second place close to it?
Yeah.
I was like, do you know the Reds are having a really good year? He goes, the Reds, they always stunk when you played. And, you know, so the teams that fly under the radar, I love them. I love the stories. And I think it's like the 07 D-backs when we got to the NLCS. We weren't supposed to do anything that year. And I think we we broke the Pythagorean theorem of runs allowed versus runs scored, and we were supposed to only win like 30 games.
Mark Reynolds, everyone.